Religion has many victims, and these are the stories of how they survived. This episode contains detailed discussion of childhood sexual abuse, physical abuse, religious abuse, rape, and systemic failure to protect children. Please take care of yourself as you listen today, and keep in mind that this episode may not be appropriate for all audiences. If you are a survivor in need of support, contact the RAIN hotline by calling 1-800-656-4673 or visit RAIN.org. And if you know of a child that's being abused, call the National Child Abuse Hotline to file a report by calling 1-800-422-4453. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to The Awakening. I'm your host, Heather.
And I'm your co-host, Tamara, a.k.a. Jezebel.
And today we have a really incredible guest named Heather with us today, which I'm so excited because it's the first time we've had a Heather on the show. So welcome into our show, Heather. We are so excited to get to sit down with you and chat with you today about all things religious deconstruction. So welcome in. How are you doing this morning?
Good. How are you? I know Heather and Heather together. That's usually a sign for trouble.
It is. You know,
and then you just add a little dynamite from me over here.
I was actually far too grown before I ever saw the Heathers movie because, of course, I was raised in high control religion, so I wasn't allowed to watch things like that. And when I did finally watch the movie, I was like, oh, this isn't so bad. So we always talk about, you know, religious trauma and deconstruction on the show. So I always like to start off by asking people, what was your religious structure and upbringing? What did that look like? What kind of environment did you come from, Heather?
So I was brought in to a Pentecostal organization. It started off as a church, as they always usually do, right?
Yes.
And then it slowly started turning into a cult. Both my sister and I were in there for 21 years, and we were brought in through the foster care system.
Oh wow. And you know, it's kind of shocking, and a lot of people don't realize how much the foster care system does funnel into religious spaces, you know, and a lot of those kids, and that's why it's really sad that like legislation that had been in place to protect LGBTQIA plus kids from being in a Christian household existed to keep them safe from that type of bigotry and homophobia. And now that they have done away with that legislation, it's absolutely terrifying for foster kids and the things that they are potentially exposed to now. So, and I hate that. I hate that pipeline. I really do, because we all know that, you know, with indoctrination, it really sticks if they get you when you're young. That's why they're always talking about putting the Bible in classrooms. We want the Ten Commandments back in schools, you know, but it's because when you get them when they're young, it's harder for them to be unindoctrinated later in life, right? It's harder for them to break away from the fold, so to speak, because every aspect of their life is being part of that fold.
Were you, was your family unit a part of the Pentecostal faith prior to foster care? And if you want to expand a little bit on how foster care happened for you and what happened with your sister?
Yeah, so, in a nutshell, this is, because it's critical that I share this part. So both my sister and I, we were in the foster care system for 8.5 years. Because of our birth mom, back and forth. My birth mom is a raging alcoholic still to this day. And basically her rights were finally terminated about halfway into our journey in foster care. I think when I was 5, her rights were finally terminated. Like the judge, everybody was like, you're done. Like we have given you plethora of chances, like 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 chances to get your crap together. And you've still chosen not to. So you're done. So, and what led up to that was an overnight visitation with our birth mother on Christmas Day that basically led to me being raped by her brother-in-law, and she had set the whole thing up. And my sister walked in and found me laying in a puddle of my own blood. So my sister ultimately
Sorry.
took heroic
Oh,
measures
no.
to save my life. And that's ultimately how the last, that was the end of the end of the end for her. And birth mom was done. So from that point, we were in a home. We went into a home for 3.5 years. A Christian home, actually, and they were Baptist. They can kind of still are, even though they don't attend a Baptist church anymore. But they're still Baptist, like they're, but a Baptist home. And my sister and I were the first two in the home. We were the first two to leave the home and the first two to come back to them as adults. So full circle moment. And then they had three others that joined, and there was five of us for like a hot minute. It was an amazing time. Like they, I was there, we were there for 3.5 years. They were giving everything that we needed. I was getting the help that I needed. I have a diagnosis of fetal alcohol syndrome. So I'm born addicted to alcohol. And so I had to have physical therapy. I had to have speech therapy. I had to have behavior therapy. And then I was intermixed with special education classroom and a regular classroom. So my foster parents made sure that we had it all there. Like we were getting everything
Yeah.
that we needed. And then, so when BioMom's rights were terminated, that immediately put us up for adoption. So my birth dad was basically like, listen, like I still want to be a part of their life. But I just don't know if I can follow through with the demands that DCF is making. So anybody knows the DCF system and how they work. They literally make the parent, either mom or dad or both, jump through hoops. And that's
Yeah.
kind of what he was being made to do, was jump through hoops to get us back. I mean, not that he had lost the custody of us. Actually, they gave him more of an upper hand just because he was not the abuser.
Yeah.
So they did give more privilege for him. And they were like, well, you have to find a 3-bedroom home. The girls can't share a room, and you have to get a job. And back in the 80s and 90s, like there wasn't a lot of help for single dads.
Yeah.
And he also had a special needs diagnosis as well. So he was doing the best he could. He was working,
Yeah.
but working one job with raising two kids on his own, one of his daughters is special needs. It's a lot. I mean, he had the help of his mother, my grandmother, but there was no community. And we lived in the state of Maine where in a town where everybody knows everybody, and it's
Yep.
a small town, and just there just wasn't a lot of support for him. I think had he had the right community support, it could have worked. It wouldn't have been perfect, but it could have worked. And then for his safety as well, because our birth mom pretty much used all three of us as a punching bag. So it just he wanted us to still be a part of his life, and he still wanted to see us. And I think he thought the only way to do that was is if his sister adopted us. And so in comes my aunt, who I know her as my aunt at that time, and she just kept telling DCF workers and the foster family, like, well, the Lord has already told me that the girls are mine. There's your red flag. Okay,
Oh, wow.
there's your red flag. And our foster mom warned her and was like, this is a bad idea. Like, this is your heart might be in the right place. And I think we all can say that everyone has good intentions, right? Like at the end of the day, someone taking in some kids might have good intentions, but what goes on behind those closed doors, you don't know.
Right.
And that's kind of what happened with my aunt. Like she had good intentions. She loved us, and she, at the time, I think she loved us, and she wanted us to be able to have that connection with family. But I will go to say, for the record and on the record, that reunification with bio family is not for every child.
No.
It is not for every family,
No.
and it was not for my sister and I. It should never have happened. And our foster family warned her, like, this, you are not equipped to help her. You are not equipped to help them with the needs that they have. They are thoroughly traumatized. And my aunt learned this the hard way. Everything that she was warned has backfired on her. From the first night we entered her home, abuse started immediately. It was a 3.5 year adoption process. So there, like, I from what I remember, everything was signed in 93, but we didn't get picked up until February 14th of 19 or February 13th of 1994. We were picked up in a blizzard. Okay, so that's just the thing. So moving forward, so that night, that very night in our aunt's home, there was abuse immediately, where I was thrown up against the wall. My aunt thought I was having a temper tantrum because I wasn't getting my way. And my sister came out of her room and was like, "No, we're traumatized. We don't really know where we are. There's nothing familiar. There's nothing here." And our foster family had us in a routine of, I mean, it was a nightly routine of, we were getting read to, we were re getting read books to, and we were, they would stay with us until we fell asleep. Like, there was just a routine and a comfort, right? And so my sister tried to tell her, and of course my sister was rebuked. And I just got told, "Well, you need to obey. This is what I'm asking you to do. You need to go to bed." And I was freaking out. I was having a flashback. It just was there, right? And so the only thing that worked to get me to calm down was calling foster mom. And so my aunt called her and was like, "I don't know what to do. She's out of control. She's having some raging fit." And of course, my foster mom's like, "No, she's traumatized. She doesn't really know where she's at. She's confused. She was with us for 3.5 years, and you're just taking her 6.5 hours away from us." And I'm like, "There's just, let me talk to her." So we get it. Long story made short, she gets me on the phone, and she calms me down, and she's like, "You know what? I just realized, like, you left your favorite doll here, and it didn't get packed into the box." And so she's like, "It's a thing that I slept with every night." And so she's like, "We're gonna send it to you, not a problem. Like, and we'll see you in the summer." Because that was one of the rules, or the demands that my sister and I and this foster family had, was that we don't stop the communication. And so we went seeing them every summer for the next 21 years. Phone calls, birthday cards, pictures, family pictures of them, adoption pi pictures of every kid that they adopted. It just it, church every summer with them. You know, it was a thing. And we were right back at home. And so, and of course, we behaved well because we know how to behave around them. We were on our best. So yeah, that's ultimately how it ended up. But yeah, there was abuse in my aunt's home the very first night. And that very first night, after I had been asleep, I had heard my aunt come into my room at, like, must have been like 2 in the morning. It was like in the middle of the night. And she was laying hands on me, which is what Pentecostals do. And she was casting demons out of me in the middle of the night. And
Oh
for a
no.
minor child, you
That's
can only
traumatizing.
imagine, yeah, how traumatic that was. So there was abuse the first night in the home. And then it just got on to be, so then there just was a lot of rules. No makeup, no piercings. You know, the hair they didn't really care about. They're like, whatever. But no jeans, no tops like the one I'm wearing, no spaghetti strap shirts,
So was
no.
this like more like fundamental Baptist than like IFB type?
Yeah, I mean, it was a Pentecostal organization, full Pentecostal. And it's just, yeah, you couldn't, no dating, no sex before marriage, no, none of
They
that, no
usually
letting
take it
your
a
voice.
little farther than the IFB or the Fundamental Baptist do,
Yeah.
in Pentecostalism. They take godliness and holiness and
They can't,
obeying the
they get to the
literal word
extreme.
of the Bible, like to the extreme.
Yep,
So,
to the extreme.
what kind of messaging were you taught about yourself in this environment?
So the messages that my sister and I were taught were that we were demon possessed.
I'm so sorry.
Because of our trauma, because we came from a foster care environment, because we came from an abusive mother, basically we were told and taught to believe that we have demon possession, that was brought upon us because of what we did.
And
There's no.
especially if you have any types of behavioral issues,
Yes.
any types, that gets labeled as being possessed by the devil,
Yes.
and that they have to pray the devil out of you or beat
Yeah.
it out of you, whichever way they need to get it out of you. But a lot of
So.
times, children that have behaviors and autism and stuff in the high controlled religions, it is really difficult for them to understand that that's a manifestation of a disability and not a
Right, and
demon
trauma.
possession.
Yeah,
Yeah,
it's a
absolutely.
manifestation of trauma, and they don't. So this organization is still running, and they have a school, and I was a part of that school, and it was hell on earth. They do not support children with special needs. They don't believe in it. They don't support it. They think that I am in rebellion and I'm choosing to not know how to do certain things, and it's not the case. And that's not how that works. And so I became target for sexual abuse.
Oh, man.
I became the target. And so my aunt knew that. Like, she knew going in that there was a pastor there at the time who was sexually abusing his daughters.
Oh,
And so she
no.
knew that. She purposely didn't tell DCF that. That's where I wish DCF would have done a little, like the caseworker would have done a little better job of doing an investigation on her. And I will just state for the record, I had amazing caseworkers. I don't think I had one bad caseworker. They all went to bat for my sister and I. Same with the law enforcement. Like, they went over and above and beyond to make sure that we were safe, so much so that there was a SWAT team at the hospital making sure that we were okay. So, like, I'm not here to shame or derail caseworkers. I understand that we in this country we have a
So
handful
many.
of horrific ones and we have a handful of amazing ones. And I just, my
Absolutely.
sister and I were fortunate to have really good ones. Now, do I think they could have done a little better with doing some investigation on my own? Absolutely. I think that they that kind of slipped through the cracks,
Cracks.
but I think that they were more focused on somebody in the family wants to take the girls, like the and I don't
Placement.
think that that should have been the case. I think that they should have done a little more. So if that's something that could improve, absolutely. So that being said, yes, that I became the subject to sexual abuse, where I was sexually abused inside the organization and inside my aunt's home, and it would start with I would just have a meltdown, whether it was a meltdown about homework, because homework was really hard for me, or just
Especially with fetal alcohol syndrome.
triggered and having flashbacks. And my aunt again went to the extreme of, okay, well, I'm dealing with a spiritual issue. And so she would call this pastor over, and it was a constant. One day she actually brought him up to my room, and handed him a bottle of olive oil. And she was on the phone with the leader of the organization who lives in New Jersey. And she walked out and closed the door and left me alone with him for over an hour while he was laying on top of me, quoting scripture, sexually abusing me, and rubbing olive oil on my body. And this was a weekly thing. This was almost a
Oh
nightly
my
thing.
gosh.
Anytime I had meltdowns, flashbacks, they saw it as defiance, and I became the target for sexual abuse. And this went on for 7 years, the sexual abuse.
I am so sorry. That is so
Oh, sorry.
egregious. Like, wow. I can't. Like, wow. I am so sorry.
Especially like every week we hear a different story. Every week it's a different type of minister or pastor or youth pastor or deacon,
Or worship leader, yeah.
worship
And
leader. And you
it's
know,
not
every
just the
week I,
men. Yeah. And it's
yeah,
not just the men, it's the
and
women.
every week I sit here thinking, and they're still sitting on the pews of those churches like there's no accountability at all for what they do to women and children, but they're still on those pews.
And they're
They're
still
still forgiven.
preaching holiness, like
Yes,
they're
and
holy
godliness.
and righteousness, like they're righteous, like you
And we're
cannot be a
sinful
righteous
creatures because.
person if you've got the stain of harming an innocent child on your hands. Like, oh my gosh.
I know.
They
And
can't even care.
I confronted my aunt, like, and I, because I broke my silence about it in 2017. Actually, 2 days after my birth dad had died, I got her on the phone and I was like, hey, do you remember this? And I specifically just requoted what I had told you guys. And she's like, well, no, I wish you had told me. And then she kind of, they play the game, right? They're
Oh,
like,
yeah.
well, so first she tried to pretend like she was like, well, I was trying to remember like, I remember walking by your room and it was sunny out and the window was open. It was a beautiful day. And I'm like, really, are we going to play this game?
Yeah.
And then she was, and then she went in to be like, well, I thought I was dealing with a spiritual issue because you were so out of control.
Yes, and that's always what they do. They deny, deflect, and then they victim blame. It's the same pattern of behavior every single
Every
time.
damn time.
It's always the victim's fault.
And
And we
I
have
told
seen
her,
that time and time again. And it's another thing that just makes me so angry and sick, like physically sick.
I told her, I was like, you knew exactly what you, I was like, and I called her out on it. I said, you do remember taking a recorded confession from this man a couple years ago about him saying that he was touching his daughters. So you
Yeah.
knew. And she's like,
Yeah.
and she even admitted. So she admitted to me, like, yeah, he was abusing his daughters. So, and then I lost it. I was like,
That's the
you
other thing. Hey, the other thing that I've noticed is how many wives, partners of
Yes.
the abusers, week after week, my mother included, stand with the abuser,
Yeah.
excuses their behavior. Lets them know that, you know, they're just struggling with temptation and the devil
Right.
is on
A
them,
sin issue.
and it's, you
Yes.
know, and they're trying, and the whole time you're sitting there as a child holding all of that
Yeah.
information in your little teeny tiny hands, and you don't have a mother who can even fucking stand up and say,
Yeah.
what the fuck?
That was, you know, that was like the man that was arrested that used to go to church with us, you know, his parents, his mother, and even my in-laws, because he was somebody that went to church with our whole family, were blaming him, harming all these children on the devil. It wasn't him. It wasn't him who had done it. It was the
It's
devil
the
who had
devil.
gotten a hold of him. And they do it so they can e live with the egregiousness of what it is that their Christian person has done. But the reality is you're removing all the accountability from the person who did the harm and putting it onto something that's not even tangible, you know?
Right.
And
The thing that I heard too was like, well, you know, it's not right to put a good man in prison. He
Yeah.
needs to take care of his family. What are we going to do if we just remove the only breadwinner in the family? He's still a good man. He just
Yep.
made a mistake.
Right.
It
It's
was
always a
just a
mistake.
mistake.
Yeah. And that's
Yes.
and not to go sidetrack, but I'm sure you guys are aware of the newest Duggar news, right? With Joseph Duggar being arrested.
Yes.
Okay, it's the same. That's the same thing, exactly what you're
Yes.
talking about. His Josh Duggar wrote him a letter in jail saying, like, we're being targeted because of our beliefs. Like, that's such a load
Yes.
of bull.
Yeah.
That
Yep.
is such a load. Okay,
And it's
anyway,
like they're being
sidetrack.
persecuted, and you know, their names
Yes.
are being run through the mud, and this is a trial and tribulation that they must have faced and go through.
It's like, no, you're a
Right,
fucking
bullshit.
sexual predator. Like, you're a sexual predator, dude. You need to be buried
Period.
under the jail, wood chipper. Like,
Right. And
no.
because we stand and hold you accountable, then
Right.
it's like, oh, you're going after me, and it's a
Yep.
spiritual warfare. And
Yep.
it's
Yeah.
like, how can this be a spiritual warfare? You don't ever heal from these things. You don't wake up
No.
tomorrow after sexually abusing children and say, I'm healed.
Yep.
Praise God.
Right. And you know what's
That's not how that
crazy is
works.
they will claim that they've been healed or God has restored them. And Robert Morris is a good example because, you know, he did all this years ago, build up an empire on top of that. Okay. And then now here we are, all this time later, he didn't do hardly any time in prison for what it is that he did. And now the Christians are saying, well, God has forgiven him. He's a man of God. No. No. And
No.
this is exactly how the cycle keeps perpetuating itself because
Right.
sexual predators know that the only place that they can find safety and
Is in the church.
admiration is in the church.
In
They
the
can
church.
rape a child on Saturday, but go to the church on Sunday and claim
Right.
that they are sorry, whether they are or not, because we know these men don't actually physically repent. They just do it
Right.
with their lips. It's lip service. And then they
Right.
go right back into ministry where they have access to abuse a whole different church of people all over again.
Yep.
And it just,
100%.
It's such an evil cycle. And, the environment in the church sets up the children to be abused by these men with the teachings about purity culture, because girls are already taught to expect grown men to be creeping on them. And if they do creep on them, then it's the young girl's fault, not the creepy ass old man, because you tempted him in some way, because your little child self is so much more powerful than a grown man's willpower, I guess. Like,
It's the policing of our clothes, our underclothes. It is
yep.
always our fault because we tempted that man to sin. And the temptation lies at the foot of the women.
Yeah.
The
And
women hold that.
and it's the mothers that hold up these teachings. It's the women who look the other way when the men are harming the children. It's the women who show up in court and testify on behalf of these men saying, "Well, Richard is a good man of God." Like, they
Or how
are
about
the
the whole
ones
church
that,
showing up? Shit.
yeah.
Our whole church, my pastor, whenever I left, my pastor told everybody in the church that they would stand and testify for my ex-husband because he at least was still keeping the children in the church. And then they would take the kids away from him, and my mom and dad would be able to take the custody away from my ex. But first they had to get the children away from me.
That's
And
so
so
funny.
my aunt is in a church in Arizona, and she leads the prayer. She's the leader of the prayer team. And I tell you
that's
what,
a team.
I was like, that's some boldness right there, putting hands on people after you've harmed me. And I've
Yep.
let that church know what she did, and they tried
Yes.
to reach out to me. Like, they reached out to, like, the pastor reached out to me and was like, "Yeah, we could talk further. Please call us or email me." And then he blocked me. And I'm like,
You don't
no, we're not playing
want to
games. So
talk further.
they don't want to talk. It's a thing. And it's so they've
No.
been warned. They know who she is. And I will continue to make it publicly known who she is, that she's a dangerous person. Same with the other two individuals. I can't say it
Absolutely.
enough. I have literally confronted all three. I have attempted to confront all three, because all three are equally accountable.
Yeah.
Even if you weren't the one doing the act, you sure sat behind that damn piano playing CeCe Winans songs, watching the whole thing go down. So you sure know. Oh, and then let's talk about you leaving me homeless and dumping me at a homeless shelter.
Oh man.
So there's yeah, there
Wow.
is evidence. That's how I got out. I escaped with a butcher knife to my throat. That's how I got out, because my aunt called the cops, and this whole thing wasn't allowed back in the house because I was committing fornication. That's the biblical sin they accuse victims of, fornication. Okay, it's just a
Wow.
thing. And it's like, no, I was a child. That doesn't make sense. And so I got picked up after I was released. After a 48-hour watch, I was released. And my aunt and the current leader of this organization picked me up in my aunt's car and dropped me off at a homeless shelter and said I was not welcome back until I repented of fornication. 2 days later, I found a place to go, because my sister's like, "Listen, our birth mom is saying she'll come get you. It's not ideal, not the safest, but you gotta go." Like, so I went. I know, not the greatest, I not the safest, but at the time I didn't have a choice.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I had seen my birth mother since I was five. She actually showed up drunk to get me. It's a
Wow.
whole thing. And that day, so 2 days after I was dropped off, that same current leader and my aunt showed up in his 15-passenger red and white van and dumped all of my stuff sitting in the parking lot of the shelter. And I have evidence. It's in the book I wrote. It's everywhere. I
Yeah.
plastered it. And there's no
Man.
accountability. There's no like he like I have said, you know what, because he'll come on to my TikTok lives, like, and he'll try to say I'm slandering him. I'm like, no, let's talk about
Yeah.
this. Like, this isn't slander. I have the evidence right here. This is what you did. You left a special needs child homeless. Like, this is what you did. You and my aunt did this. You knew what you were doing. I even flew back to Connecticut to confront two of them. And of course, by the time I got to the organization, they were gone and it was 11 in the morning. And I was like, yeah, you guys got tipped off because you guys are usually in service from 10 to 5.
Oh,
So
wow.
there's
Right.
no way. So, and then I tried to attempt another one, and he got actually, when I checked into the hotel, the one who actually did the crime against me, he t attempted to break into my hotel room pretending to be housekeeping.
Oh my
So he got
gosh.
word that I was in town, and a family that I had been babysitting when I, since I was 16, like called and told him, and yeah.
Wow.
So I that's how I got out. I got out with a butcher knife to my throat, and I wasn't allowed back, which is fine. I just, and the
Yeah.
social worker at the hospital was livid with my aunt, like, you gotta come get her. Like, you can't just leave her here. Like, you're abandoning your child.
Yeah.
She dropped me off at a homeless shelter.
Wow.
So, Heather,
So,
what made you decide to write your book? And tell us
yeah.
about your book and the name of it and what it's about for our listeners. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I wrote a book. It's called The Barbie Pink Walls That Kept My Secrets of Abuse.
Love that.
Title was inspired by a chapter in my book. And it honestly is a story about my sister and I. So, 2 years ago, I tragically lost my sister to suicide.
I'm so sorry.
She ended her life August 2nd of 2023, the day before her 41st birthday. I found out through Facebook and TikTok.
Oh, wow. I'm so
Uh,
sorry.
I know what a great way to find out. And I was the last to find out. So everybody in the biological family had found out before me. The community found out before me. I was the very last to know. In fact, I believe they had no intention of telling me at all until I had found
Oh, wow.
out. That was the gist of, that's kind of how that got read into, was that
Yeah.
there was no intention of telling me until I had found out.
That's so
Which, by
horrible.
the way, for those listening, don't ever post, if you don't want somebody to know, someone, don't post it on
Yeah.
Facebook. Don't post it on social media, because you know we're gonna find it. You know we're gonna ask questions. And so it
Yeah.
was, I was allowed, like, they're like, yeah, I put my foot down. I was like, I'm coming to the service. Like, this is my sister, whether you like it or not. And so, yeah, so my sister Nicole served with the Boston Police Department for over 12 years. She was a 911 dispatcher. She
Oh,
wanted to be
wow.
a cop. However, the Pentecostal cult was against that. In fact, actually, as soon as they found out that she got offered to be in the academy, that was pulled immediately. And she had to attend
I'm
a
sure of
religious
it.
school. Yeah, a religious school, where she attended Gordon College for 4 years, and that's how she escaped. That's how she got out. She actually
Yeah.
planned her escape. I kept it completely a secret. She literally came home, and told me, like, by the way, I'm leaving. And
Yeah.
she was supposed to stay all Thanksgiving weekend, and she ended up going back a day early because she had gotten a security. Campus, a security job on campus, and my aunt flipped her shit. And my punishment for keeping my sister's secret, by the way, was getting sexually abused that night. So there was a
Oh,
punishment for
wow.
that. But my sister did leave. She that was her way, and I told her, I was like, this is your way out, go. You kind of have the upper hand. You have a place to stay and a job, like a job, go. Like, this is your way out. But ultimately, a lot of trauma.
Yeah.
Working within the police department, she really wanted to be a cop, but with the Boston Police Department, your eyesight has to be exquisite. There has to be a certain number, and she was not to that number. And so she's like, "Well, what can I do to get in and still be around that?"
Yeah.
Was dispatching. And so over 12 years with the Boston Police Department, she was there for the Boston Marathon bombing. She took all of those calls. She was literally 2 years into that job when that went down. And that's kind of what started her trauma. And I only know this just based off of conversations, because I remember calling her that night or the next day, and just things she was saying, I was like, this is n you're not reacting to me normal. It sounds like you got PTSD. And of course, like, little sister who just was barely starting her own therapy journey, I didn't want to be a hypocrite and be like, you need to be in therapy when I'm not in therapy. Like, I just wasn't going to push that. And so I let it go. And I think she eventually she talked to somebody. And then it just got really, really, really bad for her. I mean, just the calls, just imagine the calls. And there was a, so she worked for the Dorchester phone line, which is, if anybody has been to Boston in that area, you know, Dorchester is the worst of the worst of the worst. It's like you don't want to be in that neighborhood. It's just not. And so she was taking calls, and it was a routine traffic stop. And it was a sergeant who had been out on the road taking that call, and the person that he pulled over shot him several times. And it was called in, and it was my sister that picked up the phone and was talking and basically got him, shut down the entire city, got him to the hospital. He's alive because of my sister. And so she took care. And so hearing those gunshots, right, over the phone and over the speakers and over the it's a whole thing when you get in there, over the TVs, and having to hear that and having multiple lines talk to you. I mean, radios talk to you. You got EMTs trying to talk to you. I mean, she took that whole thing down. She was like, no, I need everybody quiet. And she just took it down, and she got him, and he's alive today because of her. And right after that call, like, she couldn't move. She could barely breathe. And basically her coworker went and said, you need to get Nicole off this channel now. And the response to that from her supervisor was, she's fine. This is what she signed up for. And
Oh no.
unfortunately, that is the typical response, because anybody that works for the fire department, police, not, it's a volunteer thing. Like, so you know what you're signing up for. And yes, there is truth to that. Absolutely. But they deserve the mental health
Oh,
help just like
absolutely.
anybody else. Just like, there's
Right. It should
no
be honestly mandatory that they are
mandatory.
receiving, that they have therapy and, you know, they're seeing it, because you can't process those things that you're hearing on a daily basis all by
You
yourself. You just
can't. You
cannot.
can't. You can't. And so my sister was dealing the best she knew how, and she was coping. And there's no judgment, because
No,
I
I don't
struggled
judge
as well.
people. I don't
No
judge people on
judgment.
how they
She That's
cope in
how
this
she was
world.
handling it. Yeah. And so anyway, so that was, and she reached out at least four or five times, and she was not given the help. And so I found out. I actually found out August 6th that she had taken her life. And there was a video, there was a note. I didn't get a copy of any of that. Like, they wouldn't let me have a copy of the note, just because it wasn't written to me per se. But there's a doc series on Amazon that was made in honor of her that she was a part of. And ultimately, and then, so adding trauma from Boston Police Department and everything that evolves with that, then I found out she was watching my Instagram reels, and she was watching my content, and about me exposing me being sexually abused in this organization. And so Nicole never really dealt with her
Trauma from it.
trauma from it. Yeah, I don't want to say her side of it, because she's not guilty of anything, obviously, but like, she never. So I think there's a lot of myth behind the whole, like, well, they were together, they had the same experiences, and they had the same experiences inside this organization, so they're gonna heal together and be fine. No, that's not necessarily the case. Just because we were in the same household together, just because we were together, just because we were in an organization together and we went through abuse, it doesn't necessarily mean that the outcome is going to be a
The
healing
same.
thing at the end of it,
Or
right?
even
It's not.
comparable, because each person
No.
is going to be
It's
affected
going to
by
handle
that
it different.
trauma differently. It's going to, even if they're in the same household, one child will react one
That's the
way, the
way it
other
is.
reacts another.
And my
That's how it
brother's
is.
story is like that. Like, because the trauma that he experienced was so much more severe than what I did, because my dad physically harmed him on a regular basis, whereas my dad only mentally and emotionally harmed me. And my dad and my brother also felt like, since I wasn't beat all the time, that he was the one that was constantly being picked on. You know what I'm saying? But I was still abused too. It's just that my dad used his words instead of his fists. But yeah, the environment, the house that we grew up in was totally different for the both of us because our experience was so different.
Different. Yeah, my sister got a lot of public shaming, public humiliation, the verbal. She was never sexually abused by any of the leaders. It was just me, and she didn't know that was going on. In fact, actually, when she was getting ready to leave, she knew. She's like, I don't want to leave you because I know things are getting worse. And the abuse is getting worse. She didn't, and she knew stuff was going on. She just didn't know there was sexual abuse going on. And I remember visiting her actually her freshman year for parent orientation or parent weekend or whatever. And I remember going to give her a hug goodbye, and she was like, "What's wrong? Something's wrong." And I said, "Well, AC, our aunt is coming, and I can't talk about, like, I'm not allowed to say anything." But she knew something was going on, and so it's just so watching all that. And she chose to not; she never really dealt with it. And so when I went public about my abuse, like, I told her, "Listen, Nicole, like, I want you to know the things that I'm posting publicly. I'm leaving your name out of it because it's not my story to share. That is your story. Like, your perspective of it is yours to share, and it's not mine. I am strictly only exposing what happened to me." And so she obviously respected that. She's like, "Thank you. Like, I just don't want to go there. I just don't. I'm not ready." And that's fine. She was never ready. And so my book, I decided, so after she passed away, I was like, you know what? I'm gonna write this damn book. 'Cause at this point, no offense to Nicole, but now your story is kind of my story. And so I combined the two, and I gave a different perspective because my sister is being portrayed as a hero, and I'm not taking from that because absolutely she was a hero. She was my hero before she became anybody else's, before she became a hero to the city of Boston, right? Like, she was my hero. However, my foster family doesn't really want the other part portrayed as to what we went through in this organization. She doesn't want how our relationship was exposed. It was very toxic. There was no relationship. And that's unfortunate. And that's because of the lies that were told to us about each other behind our back. We were constantly being pulled away. Everything that was being spoken to us, like, we were being monitored. They didn't want me talking to her. They didn't want her talking to me. And it was just one of those things. And I like that they don't want it being uncovered that, like, oh, Nicole and Heather didn't talk. Nicole and Heather didn't have a relationship, and that, you know, something's off. Or they wanted it to be like this perfect picture perfect, well, she came back to God, and which she didn't. Okay, like, that's how the church portrayed her. That's how our foster family portrayed her, is that she came back to God. And there was a cover up, because they work for the state of Maine. They work with the governor, and then they're deacons of the church. So when you find out, when the governor finds out, oh, Susie, like, there has to be cover up, right? And so it was just a bullshit service,
They
is what it
always kind
sounds
of
like.
do that anyways. Like if you know, they're like, well, I'm sure he made everything right between him and Jesus.
No. And so anyway, and so yeah, I decided to combine her story with mine, and not, again, not to put my sister in a bad light, but just to give a perspective of my relationship, my relationship with her, kind of where it went from there. Her story, telling her story of how she wanted to be a cop and how that was ripped away from her. The story of us not being able to burn candles. There's a chapter in my book. Lighthearted little story, but there's a lot of truth behind it. My aunt basically came out of her prayer closet one day saying that the Lord had convicted her about having candles in the home, and that we couldn't burn candles. They couldn't have, like, they all had to go. And so to obviously placate to that, and to I threw out, like, one candle that was, like, almost gone. But I had, like, we had just went to Yankee Candle Factory and bought all these candles.
Oh,
Like,
man.
we just went and spent, and y'all know those are not cheap candles, okay?
No,
Like,
they're not.
we just not. And so my sister had gotten, like, these pine tree scented candles, right? And Nicole was actually over at the cult leader's home, visit like spending time with the oldest daughter. So she didn't know about this rule. And so I was like, okay, whatever. So I actually hid the rest of my candles in my doll cradle in my closet. I was like, okay, we're gonna hide these, like whatever. And I was like, you're crazy. And I was like, okay, but we just did it because we had to, because thus saith the Lord, right? And so my sister
I mean,
came
we laugh
home.
about it, right? But it
We
is
left.
that silly of stuff that
Yeah.
they start proclaiming, thus saith Jesus. And you're like, candles, really?
Candles, right. So my sister came home that night, and or yeah, that night, and she went upstairs to her room and she started burning the candle. And my aunt's in the kitchen and she's like, "What's that smell?" And I said, "Oh, I think it's Nicole burning a candle. It smells like pine trees. It actually smells really good." And she's like, "Well, she shouldn't be because she knows the rule." And I was like, "Oh." It's like she just got home. She doesn't know about this rule. So she barged up into my sister's room and was like, "What are you doing?" And she's like, "I'm just burning a candle." She's like, "I have always made it clear from day one there's no drugs in this home, and you better not be smoking marijuana."
What?
I'm like, "Okay." And so I remember, so one of us, it was either
You
Nicole or
thought that's
I,
why you were burning the candles, was to cover up the smell?
smoking the marijuana. Okay, you guys. And I'm like, and so I remember Nicole
Devil's
saying,
weed.
she calls out and she's like, and she's like, "I'm not smoking it. I'm not doing any weed in here. However, like, you were never 17, 18. You never did anything that you weren't
Yeah.
supposed to." And she's like, and my aunt even admitted, she's like, "Oh yeah, when I was your age, I was with my at my boyfriend's house and on the roof drinking and getting drunk." I was like, "Well, there you have it." I was like,
Yeah.
so it, not that we were smoking it, but like, my good God, how do you get a pine
Yes.
tree candle? How does burning a pine tree candle go from there to smoking marijuana?
Yeah.
Okay. So that story is actually in my book, you guys. I was like, this
That's
has to be
funny.
in the book because it's hysterical.
Yeah.
It's funny, but it's not, okay? And
Right. But we
how?
all have heard it. We have
But
heard it,
and it's
maybe not
very,
in marijuana, but and it's very
yeah.
reflective of the reality of what so
Right.
many of us grew up in, because something as simple as a candle can be freaking demonized by your religious nutcase family. Like, and it's
Right.
just little stuff like that,
It's
you
just little
know?
stuff.
And
It's
it's
like,
always something new because they're still doing this crap today. It was just 6 months ago they were demonizing 6, 7. And it's like those numbers have been in existence for a long time now, honey. You
listen,
haven't.
I banned those numbers in my classroom, so don't get me started. I was like, "No,
No, because
you're
it was
6'7". I'm like, "No."
a.
We're not there yet. Like, yeah, in all seriousness, all laughs and jokes aside, like it's not just the candle. It goes from purity culture all the way up. We were
Yes.
taught like I couldn't wear shorts. We couldn't wear shorts.
Yeah.
No shorts allowed. So I'm 42 years old, and the last time I wore shorts, I was 8 years old. Like, I've
Yeah.
never, because we were brainwashed, I was brainwashed to believe that like me wearing shorts is causing this pastor who is sexually abusing me to
Yes.
cause him to stumble. So I'm every ounce of my body had to be covered. And then
Yeah.
when I call it out and say, "This is what happens," I get told I'm the one that needs to repent for fornication.
Absolutely. And you know that messaging sticks with you because, gosh, I'm 45. I've been out of the church almost 10 years now. I still don't wear shorts either.
I don't.
I feel fully exposed. Like I almost
Yeah,
feel
I
like
feel
I'm
like I'm being.
underdressed if I'm wearing them because of
I.
that messaging. Like for
Yeah, I feel
real.
like I'm being violated all over again. So I
Yeah.
don't wear, and it gets put on me as to, well, you are creating that stumbling block for
Yes.
him,
Yes.
and you are to be pure for him.
It was 2 years ago that I finally put on a for the first time shorts, right? And then I was like, you know, because I've got that apple bottom booty, you know, it hangs out everywhere. It's like it's not huge, but it's just kind of like, you know, hangs out. But I remember like putting on the shorts and feeling so condemned. And I'm like, what, 52 years old, right? And I'm like, well, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
So I went to the store and I bought the hottest pair of booty shorts that you can possibly imagine. And I know I'm 50 something years old, but I dropped that fucking booty like it was hot. And I was
Yeah,
like, fuck that shit.
bloody fine.
Not
Yeah, I'm
going to be
working on it. I'm
ashamed. When
working
I
on
was
it.
younger, I couldn't do this. And then it was always sinful, right? You
Yeah.
guys, it was pretty liberating, let me
But
tell you.
it just goes to show how hard it is to break free from that
Fuck.
programming, you know, because even though we've
Oh,
been out of
yeah.
it for a while, that doesn't automatically come out of you,
Oh,
right? But, you know,
no.
so it takes a lot of healing and a
Takes a
lot of
while.
work to undo what it is that we've been taught, you
It's
know?
almost like it's an act of rebellion. That
Yeah.
is it. That is the
Yeah.
feeling that I get.
Yes.
I get this indignant feeling that I know, must react. I must be rebellious or something and say, fuck it. I'm doing it. You know, it's like you almost got to get to that
Yeah.
point to be
Get to
able to
that point.
say,
Yeah. I'm
I
getting
can't
there.
live
Getting
like this. I'm 50 something
there.
years old.
I'm getting there. Yeah. It's just a bullshit
Yeah.
thing. It's just what it is. But yeah, so
But they
my
live
book.
on it because it produces fear, and fear produces
Yes.
doubt, and doubt keeps you exactly stuck.
Accountability.
Doesn't
They
let
don't
you
want the
step
accountability.
farther, doesn't
No.
let you look around anywhere. You can't be curious of the world that you're in because you're like, no, you're gonna get
You're
it in
supposed to
any
be in the
moment.
world, not of
Yeah,
it.
and it takes the accountability off of them.
Oh, absolutely, 100%.
Absolutely, 100%. So, yeah,
100%.
so that's what my book is about. It's 59 chapters, it's a page and a half long. Each chapter is about a page and a half long. It's easy to read in that kind of context, but the content
Yeah.
itself is not easy to read. And so I have to clarify that because I'm like, it's not really easy to
Yes.
read. And so you can get it on Amazon.
Yeah. Well, we will definitely leave the link for your book in the show notes. That way, if our listeners want to go find it, they know exactly where to go get it and it's easy to access for them. So.
And there's a sample you can read
Oh,
too. They're
that's
not,
awesome.
yeah. So if you're really not sure, like I don't know if I really want to buy the book yet, you can
Yeah.
actually go into the when you click on the Amazon link and you go and look, there's a it will say view a sample of, and I think it gives like the first two chapters.
Yeah.
And so you can read a sample of it before buying the book. You can get it on Kindle, paperback, or
That's so
hardcover.
cool.
And there is some contact information in there. But here's the thing, like I manifested others coming forward. I didn't really want
Yes.
book signings and interviews. Like that's great if it comes up,
Yeah.
but at the end of the day, I've had at least five
Yeah.
individuals from that same organization reach out to me and be like, me too.
Wow.
And
And that is
one of the
exactly why it's so important,
to
because
share.
it's not about just my voice. It's not about Heather's voice. Heather, it's not even just about your voice. It's the fact that those of us who are speaking out for other people going, me too. That was
And
me.
one of
I
them.
belong to that type of church. I was a part of that type of organization. Oh my God, I'm not alone.
And one of the so when I went public on TikTok with all of this, and yes, there's pictures of these abusers on my page. One of the daughters reached out to me, and he has six daughters, right? And so the youngest reached out to me and was like, just wanted to let you know, my sisters and I are seeing your content about our dad. And I was like, oh boy, here we go. I was like, because I was waiting for this. I was like, okay, they're gonna reach out, and this is how it's either gonna go left or it's gonna go right.
Yes.
I was actually expecting it to go very far left. I was thinking there was gonna be a scene, and there was not. She was very supportive of what I was doing. Okay, if this for people listening, if this is going to tell you something, listen up, because this is going to speak volumes. The fact that she was this receptive and this supportive
Yeah.
of what I was doing, she said, we see the pictures of her dad, and we are really sorry for what he did to you. We don't have five of us do not have a relationship with him, he was a shit father to us, and there is truth to that. I was actually in their home a lot as a child, just because my aunt had to work late or whatever reasons, and they needed aftercare. And so I will say that being in their home Watching how their dad interacted with the three older girls, I knew something was off, and they didn't know that their dad was abusing me either. So we were in the same home, we were under the same roof, we were all getting abused by the same man. We just didn't know it. Like we couldn't
Wow.
say it. And
Yeah.
so she just says, you know, and I said, and she was like, you know, I don't really remember Nicole, but I do remember you. And we didn't like how your aunt was treating you. We thought that that was really, she was really cruel to you and abusive, and we're really sorry. And she's like, there's no need to involve us in what you're doing. Please don't tag us in anything, because it could
Yeah.
backfire and there could be repercussions. And so this is the tricky side to it, right?
Yeah.
And people think I'm defending the daughters, and then to an extent I am, because they are victims as well.
Yes.
Do I wish that they could, and you have to see it from their point. Like if they do come forward, there are going to be repercussions. Like you think like the threats that their dad has done to me, that's nothing compared to what he's going to do to them. And
Yep.
so I only could encourage them and be like, you know, if you wish to file a report against my aunt, if you wish to file a report, this is where I went, this is who I spoke to.
Yeah.
Please go make that report. But that absolutely, reading between the lines, they were abused as well. So the fact that I have their support, but I don't have their support
Yeah.
speaks volumes. And it just goes to show you that like they know something was going on. Like they know.
Yeah.
And obviously they've blocked me from social media. But yeah, it's so other people are reaching out. I talked to a friend, I talked to a young lady who attended the school at the same time my sister and I attended. And she had a similar experience as far as the abuse.
Yeah.
Not the sexual abuse, but the verbal and the physical. And she was in the same grade as Nicole. They were like a
Yeah.
grade apart. And so we talk on and off. We talk a lot. And she also said, you know, it brings back memories. And so people are reaching out.
Yeah.
I don't give a damn about a book signing.
Where are you today with deconstruction and faith or all of that sort of stuff? Where do you see yourself today?
I don't I attempted to do the deconstruction, and that just not has worked for me. I'm like, yeah, I can't. I did the whole like one foot in, one foot out. I did that for a little bit. I was like, well, maybe I could still work a way around it. Maybe I can still have faith in God. Like I
Yeah.
just don't. I can't. Especially after my sister's service and how that all went down. I was like, nope,
Yeah.
we're done here. We're absolutely
Yes.
done. So I don't even deconstruct anymore. I'm just like,
Yes.
nope, we're done.
Yeah. Done.
I don't really. I don't affiliate. Like, I am not a
Yeah.
believer. I would say I'm an ex-Christian at this point until further notice,
Yeah.
because I don't, there's a lot of hypocriticalness. There's a lot of not a lot of accountability.
Yeah.
And when that accountability is being called out, they I get the, not my church, not
Yes,
every
all the
church.
time.
And I'm like, okay, well then you're saying not every man, like not every
Yes.
rapist. Okay, well guess what?
Yeah.
Our prisons are filled with a lot of people that was like, not me.
Yep.
Okay,
Right.
so
Right. That's true.
Yeah. Now,
That is
typically,
true, right?
when we get to the end of our show, we will ask our guests that, if they had any, words of advice for somebody who's just starting their journey, what would you offer them? But I want to ask you a slightly different question because your experience was very different. So if you're talking to somebody who is stuck in an abusive religious home like you were, what kind of advice would you offer them? Who would you tell them to reach out to for help, support? To ring the bell and throw off all the red flags about the harm that they're experiencing.
Go to the police department
Yep.
immediately. Yeah, I would say, and if the police are, you know, if you're in a community where the police are being run by the church or whatever, because there
Yeah.
are those kind of places like Mormons, okay, or like go to your fire department. Go
Yes.
to your fire department. Go to the police department and say, hey, this is going on. In fact, I would actually say skip the police department, go to the fire department,
Yes.
because they're going to be more apt to listen and understand.
Yes.
And then they can go from there and they can walk with you and be like, okay, we got to make a report.
Yeah.
Yeah, go to your local, go to
Reporting
your local
within
farm.
your institution does not work. Do
Does
not
not work.
go to another Christian person. Do not go to another
Yeah,
religious
don't.
leader. It will not work. It will literally backfire on you and put you in
Yeah.
even more danger.
There's no, because there's no
Yeah.
shelters. There's
No.
no not like you can call, like you can call 988, but
Yeah.
that does not work. Don't you can't go to a domestic violence shelter. I think a lot of people try to send people who have been abused in the church to those kind of shelters, and those kind of
Yeah.
shelters do not work for us. That you're if
Yeah.
you're dealing with two separate issues, two
Yep.
separate different situations, and so there isn't a place for us to go.
Yeah.
There isn't, except for a homeless shelter. And I hate
Yep.
saying that, but a homeless shelter is where you're going to have to go. So if you don't feel comfortable going to your law enforcement, go to a homeless shelter.
Yeah.
If you are of the age, and you have to go, so make sure you're within your legal rights, and make
Yeah.
sure you have to look at your laws in your state, because some states at 16 you could be emancipated. You can they will handle it differently if they know that you're being abused. You can call DCF actually if you really are in that situation and you're being you can call DCF.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But be warned, if you're in a state like Utah, you're going to be put back with your abuser.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And I'm just not to scare anybody, but that's the reality of
We
it.
have to
So
be
that's
realists,
why
though.
I'm
Yep.
saying if you're able to get, if you're in a community and there's a teen home, go there. I
Yeah.
know in the state that I'm from, in the state of Maine, in the city of Bangor, there is a home for children ages 9 to 21,
Yeah.
okay, because they get kids that get dropped off at their doorstep. So
Yes.
if you're in Maine and that's your situation where you're being
Yeah.
abused by somebody, go there.
Yeah.
That's, go there first.
Other
Try to
places,
go.
and there are other places they could go to. Like if you have a local satanic temple, go there.
Yep.
Tell them what's happening to you, how you're being harmed in that religious institution. I swear to goodness, they will do everything that they can to help you and get the resources that you need. Same way with atheist organizations, humanist organizations, they're all going to do the same thing.
Go
Just
into a
avoid the
psych
church.
hospital.
That's what I'm like, literally avoid the
Go.
Christian
In
spaces because
fact,
they're not going to protect you.
I
Yeah.
would say call nine, and I hate advising this, but in these situations, if you are 16, 15, 13, 14, and you're being abused inside the church, call nine and say you're feeling suicidal, and that
Yep.
they will put you under a 48-hour hold.
Yep.
They have to, and
Yeah.
just and I know, Heather, what are you doing? What are you? But where are we supposed to go?
Exactly.
So
And
they
when
will
you're
help
in
you.
there and you're talking to the professionals, you can tell them exactly why you're there and why you made the call and what's going on. That
They
way you're in
yes.
a safe environment to do it where nobody can harm you.
Yeah,
Like,
and that's just and
yep.
reach out to me. Actually, my contact info is in the back of the book.
Okay.
So if you are in, I would say the Denver area, reach out to me, and I might be able to help you.
Yeah.
And even if it's just mentoring over the phone, I can get you
Yes.
on a phone call, and I can do some research behind the scenes,
Yeah.
to try to get you some help, kind of even that kind of a situation.
Yeah.
But yeah, other than that, go to your local psychiatric hospital, call, do
Yep.
what you need to do. I don't care if you just call and say, hey, I just attempted, or
Yep.
and I need to be on a hold. Whatever you need to do, go into the hospital, go into your
Yep.
local hospital. They will, nurses and doctors are very keen on picking up abuse,
Yep.
okay? And so they will figure something is going on. So go to your local hospital, go to your local fire department, anywhere but the church.
Yes,
And
anywhere.
yeah,
Yeah.
and make sure you have documentation ready. Like, make
Yes.
sure you if you are able to have access to your birth certificate, make sure you got that.
Yeah.
Because you can, once you have that birth certificate, then you can go from there and get your social security card, but your or some kind of an ID. If you're 16 and have a permit, and you have your I take that with you. Do
Yeah.
not pack a bag. Do not pack a bag. I will say it
Yeah.
again. Do not pack a bag. My sister and I did not pack a bag. We literally planned it. I didn't plan it. I just did it. But my sister planned accordingly. We kept the secret. So it's just a, yeah, don't pack a bag. Make sure there are things ready. Yes. Whether that's a journal, get a journal, get a notebook or a journal where you can put your ID in it. Keep it on you, keep it in your purse. Do those things that you would need if you were walking into a children's homeless shelter and you're like, hey, we need to have some kind of ID on you to identify you. Okay. So I would say absolutely an ID. If you have that, I understand if you're 13, 14, you may not have that. Get a birth certificate. Get somehow get access to that.
But you always get a school ID every year, so you could use
Yeah,
your
or
school
even a
ID.
school, yes, a school ID. Yes, get your school ID, keep that on you, keep it in a purse, in a bag, or in your backpack. But don't make it known to church leaders or anybody in your home that you're trying to leave because they will, they trust me, church leaders will find out and you are, and they will come after you. So make sure that you are protected at all costs. Make sure you have your phone chargers. Make sure you have all that. If you don't have a phone, okay. If you have one, make sure everything is. Most days, these kids have all that. So, and turn your location off. Okay.
Most
Turn your
definitely.
low. This is the number one mistake. Okay. Turn that phone off. When you get to where you are, or once you have called the police and you're with the police, turn that phone right off. Turn it off because at the end of the day, we can get you a new phone. We can replace, we can, but they, because I guarantee you, they are tracking you. So they're going to track you. So turn your phone off. You can bring your phone, but turn that phone off. You don't want them knowing where you are. So those are just some ideas. And please reach out to me if you are in the Denver, Colorado area. Please reach out to me via email. You can find me on TikTok. Reach out to me. But please reach out to me only if you're serious. Please do not reach out to me if you're trying to get info. I actually had, so the leader of the organization I escaped from reached out to me via email. He got my email off of another podcast interview that I had done. And he was really freaking stupid to do it because he used his first name as his last name and changed his first name. And he was trying to basically find out my whereabouts. He was trying to get my location. So it just know if you're reaching out to me, I'm gonna read between the lines about who you are. So it just please don't that's my only thing is please do not reach out unless you are absolutely serious and that you absolutely want some help or guidance or mentorship, and I can guide you through it. But if you are predators trying to find my location, yeah, don't reach out because I'm gonna call your ball out. I'm gonna call your bullshit. So anyway, yeah, that's in a nutshell what I would recommend.
Okay, well, Heather, I just want to say thank you so much for sitting down to talk with us today and sharing your
Thank you.
story with us. It is a heartbreaking story, but damn, you are so fucking brave, man. Like the shit that you have overcome, and to be able to come out here so confidently and to be able to talk about these things, but not just that, provide a safe space for other people that are experience the same thing. It's so freaking beautiful. So I'm just so grateful for you. I'm thankful for you, your book, and what it is that you're doing to help people. And, again, to our listeners, I'm going to leave all of Heather's links in the show notes. That way you can find her, you can read her book, and hear about how badass she really is from beginning to end.
I
And
also have a podcast too, so I will give you
oh,
that link
that's
as
awesome.
well.
That's awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Heather,
Thanks
for
so much.
being with us today. Thank you for adding your voice along with all the others that have added their voices to this podcast, just to make sure that we can help make a difference to somebody out there today. So thank you, Heather.
And as
Thank you so much for
always,
having me.
if you guys really enjoyed this show, please hit the like and subscribe button so you're back here every week so you never miss an episode. We're thankful that you're here, and together we are healing loudly together, one story at a time. Religion has many victims, and these are the stories of how they survived.
The preceding podcast is solely owned by the host or hosts and is distributed by Big Media LLC. Copyright 2026.